And we turn now to Pakistan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now we turn to Pakistan. For several days now, thousands of Pakistani soldiers have been fighting suspected Islamic militants holed up in a mountainous, rugged region near the border with Afghanistan. Pakistan's President, General Pervez Musharraf, told CNN last week the fierce fighting indicated that, quote, a high-value target was believed to be surrounded by his troops. And Pakistani sources describe that high-value target, excuse me, as, one moment, please. My apologies. Anyways, Pakistani sources describe that high-value target as Aman al-Zawahiri, al-Qaeda's number two. That's not been confirmed. Over the weekend, Pakistani officials backed away from the claim. Yesterday, the military declared a ceasefire so tribal elders in the remote region could begin talks with the Islamic fighters. All of this comes at a time when the U.S. is pressuring Pakistan to step up efforts to force out al-Qaeda and Taliban fighters who've sought refuge in the isolated area. Joining us now to help us understand what's going on in Pakistan is Marianne Weaver, the author of Pakistan in the Shadow of Jihad and Afghanistan. Good of you to join us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And give us some background, if you would, on who these Islamic fighters are who may be holed up in this fight.
Well, after the Taliban regime in Afghanistan was ousted by the United States in December of 2001, there were perhaps as many as 5,000 to 6,000 Islamic militants who were in Afghanistan at the time, who crossed the border into Pakistan over the subsequent 2 or 3 months. They are Arabs, they're Chechens, they're Uzbeks, they're Pakistanis themselves who had been in Afghanistan fighting with the Taliban against the United States.
The area they're in, tell us a little bit about that, South Waziristan.
All right, South Waziristan is an awesomely beautiful area, but it is very remote, it is isolated, it is ruled for all intents and purposes by a tribal law, a code of honor called Pashtunwala, which in fact emphasizes honor, revenge, and feuds. People live in walled compounds and mud brick fortresses. It's essentially an ungovernable area which is semi-autonomous, and the tribes of South Waziristan are almost exclusively Pashtun tribes, which have far more affinity with the Pashtun tribes across the border in Afghanistan than with the government of Pakistan.
Now, these tribal areas were tribally ruled going back to the British occupation. This is nothing new. This is nothing to do with the creation of Pakistan in 1947.
Exactly. And these tribes actually never wanted to be part of Pakistan. They resisted joining Pakistan in 1947. And as a consequence, the Pakistanis have always handled the tribal leaders with kid gloves. And this is why they have permitted, more than 50 years after independence, the semi-autonomous stature that the tribes have to remain in force.
So if anybody is in that area, and we're talking about the possibility of al-Qaeda or Taliban or some other foreign fighters, they're in there with the permission of these tribal leaders?
Oh, absolutely. Even more than the permission, the embrace. The resistance that the Pakistani army faced over 5 days of absolutely fierce fighting was not just resistance from the foreign militants, but also from the tribal leaders themselves.
And so they are providing military help to their guests, as they would see it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, according to the tribal code of Pashtunwala, once a tribe has invited a guest into its area or village, it must fight and die.
We're speaking with Marianne Weaver, the author of Pakistan in the Shadow of Jihad and Afghanistan. We'll have more after a short break. If you'd like to join us, our number is 800-989-8255. And we'll try to have my throat removed surgically or do something with it. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. I apologize for the frog who's been savaging my throat. We're going to continue our conversation, though, on Pakistan with Marianne Weaver, the author of Pakistan in the Shadow of Jihad and Afghanistan. The number to get in on the conversation is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Marianne Weaver, before the break, you were telling us a little bit about not only the men who may have been holed up in this battle with Pakistani troops near the Afghanistan border, but the region they are in, South Waziristan, and then the tribal rules that affect that region. As this battle has gone on along the border, first we heard from apparently someone close to the president himself that there might be a senior al-Qaeda person involved. The president himself said that. Then we heard from sources close to him that it might be Alman al-Zawahiri, the number two man in al-Qaeda. The Pakistani authorities are now backing off this?
Oh, yes. In fact, when Musharraf first revealed what was referred to as the existence of a high-value target on Thursday, this lasted for about 24 hours, and by Friday, the Pakistani military was backing away from the assumption that it was Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number two in al-Qaeda. First, they were saying, well, perhaps it wasn't Ayman, that it was probably a Chechen or an Uzbek, because intercepts of phone conversations between and among the militants were conducted primarily in Chechen or Uzbek. Now they're saying it could even be a tribal leader. There really was never any solid cooperation that it was Ayman al-Zawahiri.
And now there are reports of secret tunnels underneath some of these complexes so that whoever it might have been may have escaped.
Exactly. And this is another kind of retreat from the assumption that it was a high-value target.
Let's get a listener on the line. And John joins us from Denver.
Yes, Neil. Actually, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay. Well, given the track record of Pakistan that it was the only government that recognized the Taliban, it supported terrorism in Kashmir, and, you know, it just surprises me that, you know, that the United States is bestowing on Pakistan the status of a major non-NATO ally, given that they have also transferred nuclear technology to Libya and North Korea. I just don't understand that. How could the Bush administration be taken for a ride every time by Musharraf, and we are somehow thinking that these are our, you know, allies in the war against terrorism? It just completely befuddles me, and I don't understand how we could, instead of calling it a terrorist nation, be giving it our military technology for future use, which could be transferred to other terrorists.
And Marianne Weaver, John raises a number of good questions.
All right. Well, the status that Secretary Powell conferred on Pakistan as a, quote, non-NATO ally was met with incredible incredulity on the part of many people, including those within our own State Department and on the National Security Council. Pakistan has been a very, very ambivalent ally since the war on terror began. From the very beginning, Musharraf entered this fight very reluctantly. He wanted to appease the United States, but at the same time, he has a military constituency which has become increasingly anti-American, increasingly fundamentalist itself. He now also must rely on the support of a six-party coalition of Islamist parties to maintain his hold on the parliament, which was set up after highly, highly questionable elections last year. So what we're really talking about is Musharraf walking a tightrope between the U.S. and his own constituency. And as a result, his fight against the Taliban, against al-Qaeda, has been lukewarm at best. Now, also, you said that Pakistan was the only government to recognize the Taliban. Actually, there were two other governments, Saudi Arabia, another one of our steadfast allies, and the UAE. But Pakistan did not only recognize the Taliban. Pakistan's military intelligence organization, the ISI, created the Taliban.
And he mentioned that Pakistani officials had been involved in smuggling nuclear materials to Libya and to North Korea. John, I think you left out Iran as well.
And Iran as well, exactly. And this is absolutely outrageous, in fact.
At the same time, though, Marianne, can't you see from the administration's point of view, if you're trying to prosecute some kind of a military mission in Afghanistan, remnants of the Taliban in support of the new government there, a Pakistani alliance of some sort is absolutely vital, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's absolutely vital. But this has now been going on for 2.5 years. I think we should have put a lot more pressure on Pakistan from the very beginning to really clean out the tribal areas. Even when I published the hardcover edition of my book in October of 2002, U.S. intelligence officials were telling me that early that both Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri were in Waziristan.
One other element we can't leave out, of course, is that Pakistan is now engaged in talks with India, which we don't know how they're going to come out, but the most promising in some time. Anyway, let's get another listener on the line. Alphonse is with us from Marietta, Georgia.
Hello, Neil. Hello, Ms. Weaver. I've actually read your book, and it's, I must say, one of the best books ever written on Pakistan. My point is that I've done quite a bit of research on Pakistan. I've been keeping up with the news. And there's this tribal leader called Naik Mohammed who basically controls this enclave of Waziristan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been known for quite a many years that he had been playing basically host to a whole bunch of Chechen, Uzbek, and some Tajik fighters right from the Afghan jihad days.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that these guys were, you know, there all of a sudden and nobody knew about it is not true at all.
Mm-hmm.
My theory is that because Secretary Powell went there, and we've seen that every time General Musharraf comes to the U.S. or somebody goes to Pakistan, they try to stage some kind of big operation to show that, hey, we're doing something, and it's pretty much a dog and pony show without, you know, a lot of style but no substance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this time when they went in, they've been negotiating with these people, other tribal leaders, since November last year, to, you know, kind of clean up or do something and went nowhere. And this time, I think Secretary Powell went there and kind of talked tough to General Musharraf, and he figured he could just, okay, let me send in a few more troops and see what happens. And
well,
I think it totally backfired.
Well, let's get a response from Marianne Weaver, also noting that today General John Abizaid, the leader of U.S. Central Command, arrived in Pakistan, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know, I agree with everything that you said, and the timing of this has been exceedingly peculiar. Secretary Powell went to Pakistan on Thursday with a very specific mandate. The United States is furious about Pakistani's nuclear proliferation. The United States is increasingly irritated with Pakistan's reluctance to fight the battle on terrorism. Now, the nuclear issue in particular is exceedingly dangerous. Pakistan has, in fact, set up what one commentator called a nuclear Kmart. They even had a website through which you could purchase nuclear material. But Parviz Musharraf, number one, pardoned Abdul Qadir Khan, the chief of this network and the founder of Pakistan's nuclear program. He pardoned him. He closed the investigation. He refused to investigate the military, and it is beyond credibility that the Pakistani military was not involved in this. Much of the material being sent to North Korea as recently as 2 months ago under Musharraf's watch was transported in Pakistani military planes.
Marianne Weaver, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Marianne Weaver is the author of Pakistan, In the Shadow of Jihad and Afghanistan, and she reached us we reached her at her office in New York. You're listening to Talk of the Nation, which is coming to you from NPR News.